Welcome to La Film Nation. Our podcast is about filming, business, and gear. On today's episode, we're going to be talking about COVID-19 and how it's affecting our current projects. And later on, the third part of our series on video production. Let's get started. Welcome back. My name is Nigel, and I'm a videographer and filmmaker based in Fukuoka, Japan. And John?
Hi, I'm John Beer. I'm a YouTube filmmaker. And William?
Hey, I'm William. I'm a photographer and videographer in Fukuoka, Japan.
All right, thanks, guys. So like we said, COVID-19 has been going on for a couple of months. Yep. And for some of us, you know, we've had a lot of canceled jobs, but hey, there is a future lining coming up. I'm starting to see work coming in again, which is really nice. For you guys, I mean, how's it looking for you so far?
Yep. Guess I'll go first. Yep. Just hammering out the online content. I think now is a good time to work on online content because, well, everybody's consuming. So that's what's been going on for me, just the YouTube hustle.
That's right. Nice, and you've been doing a lot of YouTube videos, haven't you? You've been pretty busy on your personal level, haven't you?
Yeah. My YouTube, filmmaking YouTube, I'm just making basic stuff, like some Premiere Pro tutorials, some stuff like that, as well as finishing travel videos of footage that I had from before.
That's right. And you just broke 1,000 subscribers. So congratulations to Mr. John Bear over there.
Thank you so much.
Now you can actually put monetization on. And you were just mentioning in your community tab, you can actually start to promote or actually do like blog postings in your YouTube channel.
Yeah, that's right. They gave me a nice little email like, hey, congrats. Now you can do community posts. And, you know, it'll show up in their feeds.
Excellent.
So that's cool. Nice.
For sure. Yeah. And how about yourself, William? What have you been up to?
Yeah. So like John said, like it's a good time to work on stuff that you made put aside before because you didn't have time. So recently I finished a video like featuring John and I. We shot in Osaka last September, I guess, or October. So you can check it out maybe in the description. It's a fun little
parody. We'll show a little bit here too. Yeah. We can show some of the people watching here.
It's a very, very silly parody of Camera Cops.
Which is a spinoff of Buck Rogers, actually. Buck Rogers, so if you guys are, maybe some of you are too young to remember Buck Rogers.
If you're very, very old.
me.
Maybe you can know Buck Rogers. Anyway.
Yeah. Yep. It was really, 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 really well filmed. It's really fun. I know you spent a lot of time in the effects department and made a lot of custom transitions and things like that. So it's good that you finally got it out there.
A lot of weird, cheesy transitions and effects. Yeah, it was really fun. Hey. Fun to make.
But we're time travel, you need the cheesy transitions, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Well, you know, the only way you're going to learn how to film and make stuff is do personal projects. And when you get the client, you can be like, I remember that one time I did a personal project. And, you know, you can use those same ideas and spin-offs to actual clients. So you have to make stuff by yourself. And I think that's a great future video for us is to actually do our own little personal videos and have a little competition between three of us. So I think that'd be fun to do.
Foreshadowing. I like that.
Nice.
Yeah.
What I like about it, though, is like, I mean, we really shot that like on the spot. Like we really had this idea just based on one music. And we just went ahead and just shoot it. It kind of goes against what we said about having a proper storyboard, but you know.
Yeah, well, I mean, the storyboard was the parody, so we kind of had like the outlines of it.
Yeah. But anyway, it was fun. Check it out.
Run and gun is sometimes fun to do when you're, you know, shooting from the edge of your seat and you don't really care. You're just having fun. John, do this next. Run here, jump here, do this. Right?
Anyway, that's good stuff. And it wasn't for a client, so I don't know. It was okay.
Actually, you know. We'll go into production in this episode, and there is a lot of spontaneity. You need to improvise a lot. So I guess we'll get into that later.
Yeah, for sure. So
apart
from that, my client, the client work I talked last time about, it was like for a small gym that does cycling, like indoor cycling training videos. And the guy came to me last time, he was so happy with the first video I did for them. He said, okay, we're gonna make 100. And I was like, What? We're gonna make 100 of these videos. Okay, okay, sure. Okay. So I guess I'm gonna be busy for the foreseeable future. When he says 100, it's gonna be like maybe 4 months and four per month for like a long time, because he wants to make an app and release them little by little.
Oh, but, that makes sense. Yeah, cool. So it's one for each sort of like...
Yeah, it's like four a month. And if you subscribe to his service, you get new ones every month. That makes sense.
Okay. I think this, you know, when you're working in Japan, trust is the biggest issue for all of us. And Japanese are really, you know, they're really reserved in trusting foreigners like us. And so once they taste that cheese, they want the whole block. Mm. And so he's had a little nibble of what you can do. And now he realizes, you know, hey, this cheese is quite delicious.
I can actually make something out of it. It's like now he trusts me and he trusts me and like he wants me to do everything. And I'm like, wow, cool.
That's what it's all about. You just got to get your foot in the door. And once you do that, it's going to spin off, dude. You're going to start to see this guy. He's going to recommend you to, you know, the yoga girl who's doing yoga. And now it's going to just keep snowballing and things like that. So you're on your way, man. That's what it's all about.
That's cool. You
know, get your foot in the door, man. So,
So I'm not to, not to complain for me for now.
Exactly.
Not too bad.
For myself, I did a series on a 21-day challenge, and it was kind of funny. I didn't actually film any of it. All the gym owners actually took their phones. They bought microphones for their phones.
That's nice.
I prepped them up and told them, you know, film this way. Don't move around and hold the shot. Don't be the crazy, you know, all over the place. Mm. And then they wanted to do a 21-day challenge video, and they released a video every day for, I think, 7 days or something like that. And they did a whole nutrition thing, and they had an email campaign that was sending out the videos to all their subscribers. And he said it was super successful. And he just hit me up yesterday on WhatsApp and said, Nigel, we want you to start doing more of these where we're going to do a paid program now. And so now we're on to phase two. So it's pretty cool. You know, we started a whole new video series and now it's moving on to phase two. So I'm super stoked. I'm happy.
That's cool.
Nice.
Cool.
Yeah. It's all right, like, sounds good, guys.
So your client, like, kind of, like we said before, he kind of bounced from like the bad situation of COVID, is actually turned it into something great for his business, understand it, right?
Yeah, he's actually thinking about doing a monthly subscription. Actually, I don't know how much I should be talking about this, but he's actually wants to do a monthly subscription and maybe have me come in and film, you know, a whole set of videos professionally in the future, and then we would just sort of trickle it to the user. So maybe we would have content spread out over the course of 3 months or something like that. So
exactly like my guy, basically, like he wants to do an app and you subscribe to it. You have access to the location itself where you can use the bikes, but you also have access to all the videos at home on your app. And you just pay a monthly and that's a cool business concept.
For sure.
Smart. Scalable as well.
Yeah.
And there's other people who'd be interested in that type of service. So now you could outsource that and get people to help you film. Maybe you could have a cameraman B go in and do like a yoga, for example, and then he films the yoga. And then now you're able to edit it, get an editor, move in. Now all of a sudden you're the guy sitting on the captain's chair watching it all happen and pointing the fingers and telling people what to do and stuff. So there's
you
a
mean,
lot
you
of...
You mean the director?
The director or the producer, or the producer maybe, or producer.
Yeah, whatever. Who cares?
Anyway, the boss.
The man on top.
I'm the boss.
I'm the boss.
Look at me. I'm the boss.
All right. So last week we talked about Real Engine 5. It's an absolute game changer for video games and also the filming world. And Corridor, if you're not familiar, the funny VFX guys. And is that right? VFX?
Yeah,
is
Corridor right Digital. Yep. Yeah, they like doing VFX and their own little short films.
Yeah.
Action-packed.
And they created a little video called Video Game Characters React to Bad and Great Games. These two guys sent it to us on the chat there and said, Nigel, you guys got to check it out. This is absolutely hilarious. And sure behold, Real Engine 5 is now being used by Corridor. So you guys talk about it. It was super hilarious. I'll chime in.
Actually, so it's still the Real Engine 4, right? It's still the 4. Like the 5 is not released. It's not out. But you can still do that kind of fun stuff, you know, in the 4. It's fun that we talked about this last week, and sure enough, we see that coming up. It's really fun.
And I mean, like, they're making a parody of their own series where they are reacting to VFX from movies, but now it's like, oh, we are video game characters and we're reacting to video game stuff. So it's all like,
it's very meta,
it's very meta. It's super fun.
Yeah, the whole Super Mario thing was hilarious, how his body is not really in the real world anymore. It's still on the 40-year-old technology and, you know.
Like the 40-year-old skeleton.
And then they did Randy Macho Man Savage as a long-neck weird creature. It was just Red the Dragon. Most weirdest thing I've ever seen ever. It's just the funniest thing.
And this shows them just fooling around, like taking assets from different games and like putting them into other games. Like, I think the Mario running around, that was just Grand Theft Auto with like a Mario model on top. So, I mean, this is the stuff that we'll be jumping into with filmmaking in the future, where, you know, you can use models from everywhere and just integrate it into your movie. And I guess you pay royalties or whatever, but however they work that out, that's going to be...
So, that's pretty awesome. About the money, how much it costs. I've looked it up a little bit. I might start learning a little bit about Unreal Engine. I've done a little bit of 3D in the past, but not real-time 3D like that. Anyway, I looked at the tiers, and you can get it for free. You can use it for free as long as you're like very small, and you only have to pay based on... I think you already talked about that, John, last time.
Yeah, I mentioned it briefly. Yeah, but it's basically as long as you don't... Like, if you break into the mainstream, that's when you pay.
If you make like more than $100,000 from your game or project, you start having to pay something to them, basically. But
I think that's the way it works for Unreal Engine 4, but for, for 5, they upped the threshold to $1 million.
Oh, wow.
So like... Yeah, so you can use it for free for a long time. So that's amazing. That's good news for everyone.
Okay.
That's awesome.
Cool.
All right.
Yeah, and the same thing, the video, the Rebirth video that kind of looked like Iceland made with Unreal Engine 4 that we showed last time. The guy who made that video also made a tutorial, a 40-minute long tutorial talking about the process that they went into. And it links to this library of assets that are actually scans, like real-life scans of rocks and statues and all that kind of good stuff. Basically props and environment. Yeah. And you can download all of that for free. If you have an Epic Games account, you just log in with your Epic Games account into that website, which is called Quixel, I believe. And you get all those assets for free. So you have the engine for free and the assets for free, and you can start making stuff. That's really cool.
That's awesome.
Only limitation is your creativity, yeah?
Yeah, that's cool. I mean...
I'd like to see what you guys can do, if you guys could actually make something. So that'd
be
pretty
cool.
I wish.
We'll have a Mandalorian set in no time.
Oh yeah,
we'll make some epic sci-fi stuff.
I'm gonna start projecting videos on a white wall and acting in front of it.
Oh. Could you imagine the weddings you could do? Like, you could get the bride and groom and just like doing the kiss, and it's like the most epic, like, you know, sunset shot of Hawaii, but they're not there, you know?
They're like white doves flying off, and you then like studio jets spraying their names in the sky.
Oh, nice. Yeah, you could do studio photography, but actually you place them anywhere in the world.
Totally, man. Totally. Yeah, you could just get a massive projector that just puts it behind
them.
Yeah,
nice. Do Paris wedding shots in here, in the studio.
You could do like a gimmick wedding shot where like the couple wants the most outrageous, you know, hilarious thing. Yeah. So who knows? Maybe I'm on to something. I always have lots of ideas, so yeah, for sure. Cool. All right, so let's move on, guys. Today we're going to be moving on to the third part of our series, and it's going to be all about production or filming on set. So William's going to take the lead on this one, and here we go, part three of the video.
So today we're going about production. So obviously we can't cover every shooting scenario, depending on if you're doing wedding or actual commercial productions or anything else, but we're just going to go over what we each like to do, the kind of projects we work on, our own shooting style, and hopefully you just can take away a few good ideas from there. So the rundown is going to be, we're going to talk about when you start the day, doing a short briefing and checklist and schedule of the day with your clients or talents, then establishing your base, like where you're going to place your gear and stuff, prepping your gear and rig, managing battery life, go over the settings of the camera, then a lot of shooting techniques, handheld, gimbal, etc. And then importantly, like back up your files and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a big program.
Yeah, I mean, William and I, we were going over, you know, how we're going to do this. And there's just too many things to cover.
So many things.
So we've just done it from our own personal point of views. When we arrive at a job, for us, we're not a huge production of 25 people. You know, we're just one man band sometimes. So this is kind of like what we personally go over. If you get a nugget out of this, that's all we want you to have is just a little piece of information to go, man, I learned something today that's really, really cool. And that's why we're doing this today for you guys. So, yeah.
Okay, so where do we start?
Well, the first one is the briefing, a checklist or a time schedule of the day. So you arrive at your job, you're there, and boom, you've got to meet the event coordinator, whoever it is. So
Hopefully you followed everything you need to do during pre-production and you have your short list ready, you have your time schedule ready. And so maybe what you want to do is first, when you arrive on the location, talk with everyone around and just do a small rundown of the whole day. Okay, this is going to be happen like this, and we're going to do this first and do this then, and you need to do this. Did you bring this? Did you bring that?
Yeah.
And just do a whole check of everything you need, right?
Yeah.
And I imagine even if you're doing like an event, having a short list is important too, because you shouldn't be afraid to direct people. So if you're doing, let's say, a wedding, like there are certain shots that you need to hit.
Yes.
Yeah.
So having that list of those like essential shots and then directing the people to get those shots.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
there are some things that overlap for sure.
Yeah, sure. So what you're saying, even when run and gunning, you can benefit from having a good shot list and actually staging a few shots at least, not doing all like, oh, I'm here and I'm just going to capture whatever coming in front of my camera. Yeah. It's more like
a good example would be like, active. Let's say, I mean, let's say they're performing, like, let's say they're cutting the cake or something. So we're using the wedding as an example again. Mm. You're going to want like a close up, a mid shot, or even like a wide shot as well.
Yeah. People
so
reacting.
So you'll just ask them to. Yeah. Right.
You need a shot of the cake. You need a shot of the bride and groom, like giving a shot of the cake. You need people reacting, like laughing and whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. So there are certain things where you will have to direct people a little bit. You're not just in the shadows, like you know, hiding with your camera.
So even run and gun is not just passive, like I'm looking at a scene and trying to capture it. Is try to be proactive.
Yeah.
And I've had to do concert filming, and it's a full 12-hour day. And so you have certain bands that you have to hit. You've got to be on the stage filming them from behind the scenes. There's, you know, they're from Cuba, and there's going to be 25 of them. Or like, it's like literally 20 people on stage from Cuba doing salsa music and, you know, tango, I don't know, all that kind of Spanish music. And so the event guy's like, make sure you film, you know, a lot of them. Some bands, he's like, don't worry about them so much, you know, just get a couple of shots here and there. So it depends, you know, on the events. They're very particular. The dancers get some dancer shots and things like that. But some events, you really have to kind of know who to film and who needs more and who needs less, and not focus everything on the stage. But they might say, make sure you capture the people, make sure you capture. So you're getting all this information from the event organizer. And rain is also a big one when you're doing live events. Weather's changing. So, you know, you've got to adjust to weather and things like that.
Yeah.
And if they don't give you the info, you should ask. You should not just come and be like, I'm just going to shoot what I want. It's like,
Need to be prepare. A boss. Don't be a bitch out there. You know, like, I'm serious. Like, go out there and just get demandy, get real punchy, you know? So,
So,
I've had an experience actually where I'm shooting a concert, and in hindsight, I wish I could have coordinated somehow with the person doing the lights, because the way it ended up being is that every other frame would be overexposed and every other frame would be underexposed because we had like these strobe lights. So I ended up not delivering any of that footage because that was just me doing it for free for my brother, of course. Yeah. So I didn't have the authority to like talk to the light guy, I guess. But you know, if this was actually something I would taking money for, then that would be a huge waste of time.
Also, too, when you get to concerts, you might want to look into tapping into the mixing board and actually recording the audio onto a portable recorder.
Yeah.
And so make sure you have the proper wiring that you can actually get into the mixing board and actually record into your mixers.
So what would
like
you
that?
Need for
That's
that?
Great
maybe
advice,
just maybe just a Zoom H5 or whatever and XLR cable, and that's it?
XLR and also a quarter-inch jack. You need a quarter-inch jack.
Like the guitar jacks.
Yeah, like guitar jacks.
Yeah,
okay. I have a whole bag ready to go. Mm. I know there's a wedding videographer guy, and he explains everything you need to have in your camera bag for doing weddings. I'll post the link in the description. I promise I'll do that. And it covers everything you need to know about wedding videography and getting into mixing boards. But it's a highly important thing to know. And once you get that crispy audio, you don't need to have a lapel all the time. Well, you do, but it's a backup in case, right? So you could use the mixing board audio.
That's something I've never done before, like shooting an event where you actually have to record the sound of the music or whatever. So that's really good info. Yeah. Cool.
Sorry, one more thing. And there's another place I've recorded at, and they actually have XLR cabling in the floors for the videographers.
Wow.
So when you arrive, you just plug XLR cable right into the floor mount, and it goes right into like your Sony camera that has the XLR already built into it. And the cameraman will just plug right into it. And so I've used that audio that goes directly from the mixing board through the floor into the camera. And then I just took that audio and put it into my own video after.
What kind of place is that? What kind of event is that?
That was the building in Fukuoka, the IMS building. Which one is it? The one with the garden?
Is it the one where they do the TED?
Yeah, IMS. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the Across building.
Oh, the Across building. Oh, okay.
The Across building.
Was that the thing you told me about where they do the TEDx conferences?
Yeah, the TEDx
That's it. Yeah, well, they're very well equipped then. Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, you go to the, and then I said, could I get the audio? And I just plugged in the wire. He gave me the wire and I put it into my Tascam recorder.
Yeah.
And then I also had the recording going from over to the camera. So I literally had two beautiful audios to choose from. So. Yeah, so
good
those are things you need to know when you get to the event. So again, these are, you know, things you need to go into, you know, your checklist and things like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay, so that's awesome. that's it for the first part, I guess, for all the scheduling and the checklist.
Yeah.
Organization, basically. Okay. So next, establishing your base. What does that mean? So depending on the project, you might, especially Nigel, I know you always carry a ton of gear.
And I'm a gear hog.
So, but even if you just have one bag, you need kind of like asking like, where can I put my stuff and where is it going to be safe and nobody sneaking around, you know, and just like choose a place where you're going to put your gear and be able to like have your space to like build your rig, do your stuff, basically. Maybe just a table or just a floor someplace, right?
For concerts, going into the DJ booth or behind stage, those are two locations I've used before.
Yeah, I've done that before also for one event. I had the DJ booth too. It's good because you always have someone who's there.
Exactly. So. Yeah, someone's always there. And also once you've established to like other people that you're walking in and out of these places, then people know that, okay, this guy is part of the event.
Yeah.
So like,
With the suitcase idea, I got it because I was doing a lot of videography for universities and I had to do filming for experiments. And so when you show up, you have to be very organized because it's a laboratory. You can't have some rickety-dickety little bag. You've got to have the lighting and the stands and things. And traveling, you have to take the Shinkansen or bullet train to the location. So that's why I carry a massive suitcase and everything I need is in there. I open it up and it has light stands and, you know, everything you can think of for a full day of filming. And so
can you fit something like this into your suitcase?
That'll fold down beautifully, actually. Yeah.
If you fold
it
down.
I'll teach you how to do it.
For me, when I bring lights, I also use a suitcase. Recently, I've used it for one shot. I had space enough to put the Aperture 120D in its big box, put two tripods, one tripod, one light stand, and a softbox, and also one more camera. And you can put a lot of stuff in a big suitcase, and it's easier to roll around. But for the softbox, I would recommend the ones that really fold very tight. You know, like you can just like squeeze them around like a reflector. You know, not the big ones, not the big round ones like the Aperture Dome. It's a little bit difficult sometimes to bring that. Depends on what you can bring.
Also, too, with establishing your base, you really want to get the charging thing going.
Yeah.
So what I like to do is just have my charging station and have my box down and I, you know, plug it in and I start to get all my things organized for charging as I'm going to be working throughout the day. So get your charging station organized and that's going to lead into the next part later on. But let's move on to the next one.
Yeah. So once you have that done, you You just prep your gear, you do everything you need to do. So that means if you have a camera rig and you broke it apart, just like take time. Just tell your organizer, I need 10 minutes, 15 minutes, you know, to get ready. Don't hassle me right now. I mean, you just come a little earlier and you take your time to do that correctly. That's pretty important. Cleaning your lenses, that's an obvious one, but sometimes you can forget, and sometimes you get weird flares if your lens is not clean. So
one thing to remember. I recommend always cleaning those lenses the night before if you can. So don't do it on the day
of. That's even better because you might not have the good lighting conditions to just look at the lens properly if it's clean or not. And don't forget the back elements also, not just the front.
Yeah. What do you guys think? I have these wet wipes, like a box of them. I just use that whenever I need to do something important on both the front element and the back element.
I don't use wet ones usually.
It's specific for the camera lens. I forget the brand.
Okay.
I think it's Zeiss.
Oh, wow.
Zeiss is nice. Wow.
Oh. Yeah. Super nice ones.
Very fancy. You know, very fancy.
Yeah, they're really good. And you feel it when you're wiping the lens. Okay. It's just clean, but you know, like you buy a box of them and it's worth it.
Do you need to dry them afterwards, or does it dry by itself?
The thing about these wet wipes is that they'll self-dry really fast. Ooh. So like you have about, from the time you open it, you have like 30 seconds to like do your thing, and then it's like unusable. Pretty amazing.
Okay, so there you go, wet wipes from Zeiss. Thanks, John.
From Zeiss,
that's a good idea.
Put a little link in there for the other people to check it out. I might need some myself.
I usually just have a microfiber and just go dry, you know, like. And
you don't use your t-shirt? I just use my t-shirt.
Sure. Okay. if you want me to spill the beans, 80% of the time when I don't have the microfiber at hand, I just be careful, by the way, with your t-shirt. If you scrape really hard on the edges, sometimes the edges are really sharp and you might cut a hole in your t-shirt. That happened to me at least once or twice. Yeah. I'm not kidding.
Once or twice.
Yeah. I have two t-shirts with a hole, like a little hole at this place exactly around my hip bone. So I know that's from cleaning
a
lens.
I won't be wearing my Hawaiian silk shirts anymore. I won't be getting those anymore. So another thing about the prepping your gear or your rig, if you're not traveling too much, you can get cheap boxes, you know, like utility boxes. Mm-hmm. And then I put a blanket in it. And then I put my camera, you know, if I'm going gimbal or going handheld, it has the monitor on there. It's kind of ready to go.
So I put
a blanket over top.
You don't disassemble your rig. You put everything as is.
Yeah. If I'm doing car travel, but if it's like airline / Shinkansen bullet trains, then I got to take apart it all. It's a big nightmare.
Safer.
But yeah, it's safer. But if you're just doing, you know, car to the event, then just put it in a nice box and then, you know, cover it with some blankets and put your other, monitors and little breakables in there. And William, you were mentioning, you're going to buy like a new bag where you just plop it in or something?
I've been thinking about, buying a bag. It's really built for production cameras, like, you know, the one that they use in TV where they're quite big and long, you know, they have long rigs. So they're built like long and tall also, because you usually have handles on the top. So it's good to just put your camera as is. You don't have to unplug anything. You can leave your mat box, you can leave your top handle, side handle, everything. And I'm looking to buy one of those maybe. But it's like between $150 and $250 maybe. Yeah, it's not cheap. So
my
it's
way
like
costs $20.
Use.
Mine costs $20. His costs $150. So you got to make a decision.
Yeah. Good. So I didn't buy that yet. Maybe one day.
It's on the list. It's on the list. Something we always say. It's on the list. I'm thinking about buying
it. Very truth of what we do. You never have all the gear you need.
Yeah.
And you secretly attack Amazon delivery driver when he arrives. All right. Sounds good. So the next one is, I learned this one. It's called battery numbering. It's a cameraman. I worked with him for a week in Tokyo for a PBS TV show. And this guy, I was a grip for a week. It was the best job I ever did. I learned so much. And the number one thing this guy was all about numbering. It was batteries, the V-mount batteries, everything was numbered. So my job was, if his camera had a number 2 battery, I had to have 3, 4, and 5 ready. And then right when the camera battery ran out, I had number 3. If I gave him a number 4 battery, he freaking lost his mind. He's like, going insane. You know, never give me the four. You always give me the three after the two.
So I guess that did happen, huh?
It did. Actually, I was like, oh, I'll just get ready. It'll be fine. Mm-hmm. But long story short, number your batteries. And so what you do is when you have your one, two, threes and all your different numbers, if the last battery you use was number three and the end of the day happens, you know you need to charge one, two, and three. Four and five are still sitting here, so you don't need to charge those because they're fine. They haven't been used yet. Mm-hmm. So when you get to your hotel room, one, two, three, charge. DJI batteries, one and two. V-mount or Sony, what do they call it? MPC, what is it, William?
MPF batteries. Sony batteries.
Sony, you got a whole bunch of those for your lighting. Yeah. Boom, boom, boom. You know which ones are in the sequence. It helps you out at the end of the night. You're not busy charging as much and you're organized. You look like a pro. That's
so important. I do that too. Like all my batteries have a little letter. I don't do numbers, I do letters. But and for me, so you use a sticker, right?
Yeah, my wife has one for the kids stuff. Yeah.
What I do is I use a silver pen, you know, those silver ink pens. And it works really well on black. It's very visible. It reflects light even. So even like if it's below your camera, you know, in the battery compartment, you're going to see it. It's going to blink. Nice. You know, it's very visible. So I like doing that. One thing about the order of the batteries is that sometimes I'm less anal compared to the guy you worked for. I don't do necessarily 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 because I'm thinking like, if I do that, I'm only going to use 1, 2, 3 most of the times. And they're gonna maybe lose charge faster in the long run, right?
That's
they're gonna
right.
be more used than my other ones. So from day to day, I change. I just bring maybe DEF, ABC one day, and the next day DEF and whatever, you know?
So what you could do, William, is you could actually do 1, 2, 3, and then the next day reverse it and go 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. So you could rotate that way.
That's a good idea. So. Yeah. So I don't really necessarily do them in order, but at least I know, oh, this one is this one, and I remember which one to charge and But yeah, definitely to do in order. It's easier. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Anyway.
All right, moving on. Next one is go over your camera settings and format your card. John, what do you think about this one, going over your camera settings?
So this one, I'm a little anal about this one. So I have six presets set on my camera for all my different shooting modes.
Whoa.
Yeah, and so like before doing anything, I'll very meticulously set them. I'll set the white balance and everything. Because I've had experiences where, you know, I'll shoot with the regular setting and nothing preset and just like adjust on spot.
Oh,
but there's always one thing you forget to adjust, always. Usually it's the white balance. either it's on auto or it's on something that doesn't suit it. And so like auto is the worst when you're editing because none of the clips will ever match.
And it changes all the time.
It changes mid-shot.
Yeah,
so if you have a long
mid-shots.
Shot,
yeah.
If you have a long shot and you want to use more than just a few seconds of that clip, then you're going to have to like grade the clip differently depending on where in the clip you are. It's a nightmare. So for me, I use all my 6 custom presets on my camera usually.
Wow.
I'll have one for the like VFR slow-mo thing. I'll have one for just a regular 60 frames a second. I'll have one like different frame rates are usually the first thing that determines the differences.
Mm-hmm.
But then the day of the shoot, I'll readjust all of them to make sure that the white balance and everything is set the way I want it.
Yeah.
So that That's includes good. Picture profiles as well.
Oh, yeah. That too.
Yeah.
That's good. So
those things,
that's a tough one too. Like I'm struggling right now between should I be in Vlog because I'm in 10-bit. This might get a little technical for some people, but I mean, you know, am I going to be in Vlog 10-bit, but I can't be using Vlog in 8-bit because Vlog in 8 doesn't work so well. Mm, am I going to be in slow motion? So then I should be in 8-bit, but be in natural profile, right? So it's like it's such a huge juggling act to figure out.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Because of this, I'm shooting natural all the way.
All the way,
my profiles are.
Okay.
That's kind of what bothered me with the Lumix is you have so many settings and that don't work with each other. You have to make a choice each time.
Yeah.
And I didn't get around like doing profiles like you did, John, doing many profiles. I would change every time I need something different. I would change my settings.
Really?
But now that I'm shooting Blackmagic, it's a dream. I just... I just never change anything. Yeah. I always shoot in the same way. Yeah. Maybe just the frame rate. It's just, I just have to change the frame rate. That's the only thing I touch.
And the main reason you do that, I guess, then is because you can do so much in post. That
You can change with B-roll, you can change the ISO and white balance in post. So,
But this 8 and 10-bit thing is really pissing me off. You know, I be here? Should I be there? Yeah. And I got to do slow motion.
And you don't have to bother about that, to worry about that with the Blackmagic. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So I guess one thing that you can take away from that is ideally do your settings maybe the day before, go over them the day before, and then again, just before shooting, check them again. Do a mental checklist of at least the white balance, frame rate, and what else?
Well, the biggest one would be the shutter speed to make sure it matches the lights that you have going.
For flickering, right?
Yeah, so you can't really account for that until you're on location, and then you'll just have to eyeball it, I guess. That's usually what I end up doing.
Some of you guys don't get that one. He's talking about synchro scan, where basically when you're filming certain lights, the frequency?
Flickering, the frequency of the light needs to match, I mean, the frequency of your camera needs to match the frequency of the lights that are in your indoor setting. So the thing is, in Europe, for example, it will be 50 hertz. In America, 60. In Japan, it's mostly 60 everywhere except Tokyo is 50. So it's really,
it's so weird.
It's a nightmare. It's very hard.
I was filming in some caves, and in the caves, they had a bazillion lights inside this cave.
Uh-huh.
And I'm filming the girl going through the cave, and I look at it, and just one light's okay, one light's bad, one light's okay. And every location we went to, it was literally a different light. And I couldn't adjust. So they were like, okay, and the next part of the cave is this. And the next part, and we're just moving along. And here I am trying to, you know, work all this out, and I couldn't do it. So in post, I found a plugin that just fixed it all. And I was able to do it in post. But it cost $150 for the plugin. And it basically went in and did it properly. So, okay.
And it's never going to be as good as if you did it properly before you fixed
it's a little post. It's a little bit off. It's a microsecond off.
It's a little bit of a band-aid solution, I guess.
Yeah.
But I saved the shot.
It's like trying to fixing echo in sound. It's but you can't
do
it.
Do you guys actually change the frequency of your camera? Like I keep myself in NTSC.
Yeah,
like the North American one.
So there's two things you can do. Most cameras have a setting for that, for the flickering. You can set it to 60 or 50. But this is kind of like helping the camera do it. But the main driver is actually your frame rate.
Yes,
it is. Not your frame rate, your shutter speed, actually. So the shutter speed is the most important.
Because you match your shutter speed to your
frame rate
that you're using.
Yes, yes.
So if you're in a PAL territory and you're shooting 25,
Generally
most shutter speeds will work.
Yeah, but
if not always.
If you could totally shoot in 24 or 25 or 30 and still use the same shutter speed of 50 or 60.
Right. That's true.
Yeah. That's not really linked. You can do whatever you want. Mm-hmm. Some filmmakers or videographers, they want to use the shutter speed based on degrees because it's cinematic, or you know, that's what they use in movies. They use degrees, but so you would use 180 degrees, for example, to get twice your frame rate in shutter speed, right?
Yeah.
Hope everyone is following at home.
Maybe went over a few, but it's okay.
But I think this one, if you don't use it properly, it might be a trap and actually make you make mistakes regarding that flickering problem. It's easier to manage the flickering problem if you're using shutter speed instead of degrees. Because shutter speed, you just set it to 60 and whatever, or 60 or 50, depending on when you live. And whatever the frame rate you use, it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
So I think it might be actually a better solution to just keep, right?
Yeah, personally, I like to use the shutter angle because it feels better and you don't have to change it between camera settings. Yes. Usually it'll stick.
So that's a good point. That's easier for like when you change frame rate because then the shutter speed also changes automatically. But for indoors, it makes calculation way more complicated, I guess.
Yeah.
So
one thing I've noticed from at least this Lumix camera is that you can shoot in 180 degrees, but you can also just like shoot in 176 something like that.
72.8, no?
So, something like that. So it has like this weird in-between one. And what I noticed is if I'm in a unmatched environment, that'll take away the flicker.
Oh, cool.
So at least for as long as I'm shooting in 24 frames, that works for me.
Yeah.
But if you're okay. shooting slow-mo, you're screwed either way. So don't use practical lights for slow-mo.
That's where that plug-in comes in. I was filming 240 frames a second on a low-light ninja katana sword going down, slicing bamboo, and it was low-light. And there was it had some weird stuff going on. Mm. I put that plug-in over top. Man, it fixed it. So
oh, really?
It's nice. Been a big
yeah. Slow-mo is the biggest.
Might have to get that plug-in now. Huh?
Yeah, it's a Final Cut only one. So
oh, dang.
Yeah. Slow-mo is the most difficult one. Yeah, because you're obviously going to be way over the frequency of the light.
Yeah.
If you shoot at 60 or 120 frames per second, it's like already twice the frequency of the light. And then twice that in shutter speed. So like,
just
so what I would recommend for slow-mo is to use natural lighting as
natural light or actual production LED lights, which are constant, like this one, like yours, which are constant and don't flicker even at high speeds.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. So this is going to lead into the next part where we actually talk about actual filming. Mm-hmm. And you know, we're going to go over our own
styles.
Finally. So handheld, gimbal, drone, slow-mo, wide and zoom. I mean, that's a huge topic. But I mean, you know, you guys are talking slow motion and all the natural lighting, things like that. So, you know, what's your personal style when it comes to, you know, what you're filming and maybe a little, you know, thing what you're doing and how, you know, what your style is, what you're filming and things like that. So,
I touched upon this a little bit in the beginning, but I like to get three angles at least of everything. And so when you're editing, you can create like, because I like to keep my cuts quick. Like I like to keep it punchy, but I don't want to necessarily confuse the viewer by like jumping between scenes too much. So for me in my brain, I make sure that every scene has three shots. So like if there is a shot of somebody doing something, let's try to have a couple of shots of that same action or the same person.
Do you repeat it?
It could be something simple.
Do you repeat it? Like ask him to do it again kind of thing?
Yeah, actually I do that. My most recent example that comes to my mind now is the Cappadocia travel video that I did in Turkey. Mm. Where like I'll ask my girlfriend that was traveling with me. Sorry, not girlfriend, wife.
Ooh.
Things change, huh?
That's an excuse. Anyway,
I would ask her to do the same thing over and over again to get like different angles. So it would usually be like a mid, wide, and a close up as well. Yeah. So close up, you would just go like close into the face even. And there's a shot in the beginning where like the guy is lighting up the balloon. And so like that process took a while. So I just ran in there and I just got a couple of shots of that and try to get the close up, mid and wide of all of them. And you can see that in the end video too, how that turned out. So that's just my sort of rule that's like stamped into my brain where like I don't even think about it.
That's
I just
a good
try to
one.
Get all the three shots.
That's a good one. I should remember it more. Yeah.
I think it's you get a wide, you get a mid, you get a close up, you get a point of view, you get an action shot, you get a drone shot. There's a list of a whole bunch of these and you make sure you cover those before.
Actually, Nigel, you're the first one who sort of brought my attention to this. Yeah. You sent me like a checklist of the five things you just mentioned now. So I guess I'm just simplifying it in my brain.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I really like to do the, when it's the close up, I like to have like shot of the person looking at the thing.
Yeah.
And so like not necessarily you don't see the thing, you see the person looking at it.
Mm. Yeah.
But then you have another close up of the thing that the person is interacting with.
Yeah.
So like if they're
always film action. Always film action. Always film them doing action, film the action. Film somebody
so
doing something.
You're filming the action and the reaction of the person in the shot. So you get
just an example that came to my mind right now, where I had to direct my wife to shoot me. I was doing the Mavic Mini review. And so there's a shot of me like opening the case. So you have the close up of me opening the case. Yeah. And then there's a close up of my face, like setting up the drone, and all my sunglasses, you can actually see the drone like being reflected in the sunglasses. Cool. So it was like a really, it came together really cool.
Nice.
But basically I had to tell her to get the close up of both like my hands and my face.
Yeah.
And so when you edit those two things together, you get that, what William said, the action and reaction kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's, that reminds me of Daniel Schiffer. He just did a video where his girlfriend did a B-roll thing and she did a great job and he got her to do all the filming and the editing and he was the actor and all. And he's like, I'm not going to say anything, honey, you do it all. And she did a great job. So sometimes
I'll have to check that out.
All your teaching can sometimes rub off on your loved ones.
That's cool. Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. I see that with my girlfriend too. Yeah. The way I she picked up a lot of photography stuff, like even with her camera, with her iPhone, I mean, she's way better than a few years ago, like at taking just food pictures, you know, but yeah, they pick up stuff. That's really fun.
That's great.
Nice.
Cool. Yeah, William, go for yourself there. What's your sort of style? I mean, we're all...
You know. Yeah. So I really like... Actually, I don't like using gimbals too much. I'm really about handheld. That's what I like most. I like the documentary style, you know, where you're like really point of view and you have a little natural shake or wobble of the camera. Either like a shoulder rig or just so I like using an edge strap, for example. I have an edge strap and I hold my camera in front of me and I push on it so that the edge strap is under tension, and that gives me a very good stability in terms of roll. And you can even, if you master the ninja walk, you can even get good walking shots with that that are not too shaky, at least not jittery, at least.
Yeah.
And it has a very nice natural feel, very organic. That's one of my little, the things I like to do.
And that's how you shot Camera Cops as well.
Yeah, exactly. That's how we shot it.
Just to chime in with the handheld, it's all about the points of contact. So
The
more things that are touching, the more points. So it could be your hand, it could be your inside elbow, then your shoulder, and then you're cradling it, and then you're, you know, it's all about
especially
how many, your points
so
of contact.
It's points of contact and also using your body as a source of stability, because your arms are all about wiggling, but your chest, or your hips especially are going to be very, very stable. If you hold the camera maybe on a monopod, and the monopod, you brace it against your hip, it's going to be super stable. Like, you can hold a shot like this and it's going to look almost like a tripod, even with a camera without IBIS. So that's one of my advice. Like, you can use either a monopod on your hip or a neck strap on your neck, and both of these will give you very good results. And you can do like pan shots, tilt shots. What I would do also, like for pan shots, when you need to move with your camera, don't move the camera with your arm, just move your whole body. Just keep your arm locked and just move your whole body.
Use your hips.
Up and down with your hips. Yeah, exactly, with your hips. Yeah. Keep your whole body tight and just use your hips to move around like this.
Hmm. And since we're talking about handheld advice,
it
goes without saying that shooting slow-mo will make it more steady as well.
Yeah.
And one thing I've noticed since I switched lenses to using a more heavy lens, I noticed that the heavy lens actually adds weight to the camera, which makes it more stable as well. So just adding weight to your camera, it could be something simple like that, will make it more steady.
Every handheld expert YouTuber talks about the weight, and he says it's so important to have a heavy rig because the gravity naturally pushes the camera down. So it just, you know, you're letting gravity hold the camera, basically.
It has more momentum. Like, it's more difficult to just have jitter on a very heavy rig. You can't. It's the idea behind the glide cam. You know, the glide cam is just a huge weight at the bottom, and you can't easily like shake it around. You have to put a lot of force to shake it around. So you can't.
Nigel, you still have your glide cam?
I do, and I know what you're. I know where you're going with this. I know what you're gonna do. You're talking about putting the gimbal on the glide cam, right? I was gonna do it today.
Did you do that?
I'm about to. I'm about to.
Yeah, we want to see that. We want to see the poor man's Trinity.
There's just one problem about putting a gimbal on a glide cam. There's only one problem, is you can't focus. And if you're using manual lenses, you're pretty much in trouble. You can only rely on autofocus or just, you know, figure out my focus is 3 meters and just sort of guess, because you can't touch the glide cam or else it's going to cause issues, I think.
Yeah, but you can use a nano, for example.
That's what I was talking to you
today
about.
That's why you want to buy one.
Yeah.
So, is that the reason?
If you guys don't know what nano is, it's basically what do you call it?
A follow focus.
A follow focus that's Bluetooth
remote.
Connected or remote.
Bluetooth,
just do your focus with a little dial. But I've always wanted one. I have one on my gimbal, and it's great on the gimbal, but you can't really be touching the gimbal and a glide cam at the same time. So if it's down here, I'd be able to just have it separately mounted on the glide cam. So that's what I'm thinking of doing. So,
Nice, nice. Well, looking forward to seeing that. Yeah.
All right, so I think you guys hammered the slow motion and all the gimbal. I'll dive into drones.
Drones
are such a crazy thing to fly. I mean, it's a flying camera, you know, 50 meters, 80 meters, 100 meters. And one thing I love doing with my drone is flying low to the ground behind an actor, actress, and just following her as she's doing something, and I rotate and then I pop out and I reveal it. Every drone operator I know here in this country loves doing the shots that are 100 meters up high. It's here it is, it's magnificent, it's beautiful. I use my drone in slow and low along the waves of the ocean as it's crashing and the actress is on the waves kind of thing. So if you can, keep your drone down and film those things, you know, lower to the ground. It's not all about 100 meters up high, you know. So
you're basically trying to reproduce dolly shots or even crane shots with a drone.
That's right.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it
gives more of a cinematic feel.
Oh, it's beautiful on a sunset shot, right? So, So I just had a shot last week where the rapper guy is, you know, he comes off the park bench and he comes off the bench and he goes towards the sunset. This is just pre-production, but he goes towards there and I'm in the trees and I come out of the trees and as he's going off the park bench, I'm flying behind him. And then as he goes towards the sunset, the drone just flies over top. And that's going to be the end shot of the video, basically. And we were just practicing it, you know, as I'm coming out of these trees and popping up, right? So that's how I like to use drones. Just unique, you know, crazy. Doing those kind of shots.
Just like wide scenery, but more like using it as a flying camera, like you said.
It's the shots you could never reproduce with a hand or gimbal, right? So that's what I like
for
to
sure.
do. So all right, so I think we did pretty well. I mean, it's a huge topic, gimbals and handheld, and we can't really go too deep into it, but that's, I don't know, I think we hit it pretty well. So all right. So next one is basically backing up your footage. It's the end of the day. You've worked your butt off. You're tired. And, you know, you're moving on to the next location maybe. You have a drone also. And
let's
now you've got a laptop
and
a drive.
A multi-location shoot or maybe a multi-day shoot. Yeah, that's the scenario maybe. So you don't want to wait until you get home, like maybe in 3 days, to back up your videos. Right, you want to have those saved up. So Nigel, you use a laptop usually for that?
Yeah, I have an older MacBook Pro, and I carry it in my camera bag. And I've been in the car, and as we're moving on to the next location, I'm putting the SD of the drone in there, and I'm transferring all the footage because next shot is going to be, you know, another drone shot. I don't want to lose it. Especially with drones. I might be looking at the GH5 footage, just having a quick peekaboo at it, and just making sure it looks good. I've lost footage before, so I was pretty disappointed that, you know, I was having loss of footage problems. So I had to figure out immediately what was wrong with it, and I fixed the problem.
How did that happen?
Lost footage. The Jiwoon Crane 3, the gimbal and the cord that was going into it was causing a malfunction inside the camera, and it was locking up the camera, and it was freezing. So I had to basically open the door and remove the battery. And so I was losing footage from two or three clips beforehand. So I had to tell the guy that basically I just lost two or three clips from previously. So I stopped using any wires and I just went with the gimbal manual, like no wires connected. If I needed to focus, I just had to change the ISO. I had to do it on the camera, but from the gimbal to the camera, I just got rid of that wire. And right away I figured out what was wrong with it. So. It sucked, but I fixed it. So,
but this illustrates that it could be any sort of unpredictable problem that makes you lose your footage. So, just underlines the importance of backing up your footage whenever you can
immediately.
Because you're always thinking like, well, why do I need to do that? It's like my thing is fine. It's not going to happen. But when it happens, it's going to hit you hard, and you're not going to see it coming. So,
and you could have a corrupt SD card. So if you didn't know, if you went to drag and drop. The files, and all the files are corrupt. That means everything you shot from the next part of this day is going to be corrupt. So at least if you have a corrupt SD, you know that SD is corrupt. So right away, you'd be like, that SD's gone, throw it away. Yeah. And now your next phase of your film production is going to be fine, right? You figured out the problem. So,
So, yep. yeah. Personally, I use, so I don't have a MacBook or a very portable laptop. So if I need to, if I have a long day or whatever, I use one of these. So it has less visibility of obviously having a laptop with a screen, but it's also much faster or easier to use on the go. It's like very portable. So this is a 4 terabytes hard drive. And you just, it has an SD card slot and a USB input. So you can just plug any card reader, even external SSD, like from the Blackmagic. You can plug it in, you just press one button and it will automatically copy any new file into your folder on the drive. It does that automatically. You just plug it, press one button, and then leave it. You don't have to do anything.
I want one of those.
Yeah, that's
pretty
cool.
What do they cost? What's the price tag on one of those?
I don't know, but it's pretty cheap. I mean, this is 4 terabytes, and I guess it was something like $150, maybe.
Oh, that's
something. It's kind of cheap. I don't remember exactly. We'll put that in the description, maybe.
Yeah, sure.
And for those who like, it also does Plex server, and you can watch movies with your phone connected in Wi-Fi to the.
I like that.
Yeah, it even has Wi-Fi in the hard drive, so it's pretty nice. Anyway,
for all your backup Blu-ray discs that you back up, that's what that's for. That's a good one. All right, so it's the end of the day. You've backed it all up. You're sitting in your hotel room. You're back home. You're tired. Maybe you have another shoot the next day. So now you got to start charging those batteries and, you know, you're getting ready for the next day. And just start backing it up. Get all those, you know, SDs cleaned and go over the footage, just overview, make sure everything's going good. You can maybe start showing the director, the producer, whoever you're working with. You can start showing him some shots. I've even started editing just for fun, a couple of shots together. So, it's kind of the thought process.
Sorry, William.
Yeah. No, I was thinking about the SDs. Yeah, maybe even if you back them up, I'm personally very anal about having backups everywhere. But so for videos, if your videos need to be, or your files need to be always at two places at least. And so even if I do a backup of my SD on the drive or on the laptop, I wouldn't erase them right away. I wouldn't like format my SDs right away. I would wait till I get back to the studio and then put them actually on my big drive and on the cloud and everything.
That's smart, yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
I might go over my whole backup system maybe next episode, because it's more like post-production. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'll go in detail about that next time.
Okay. I was going to say, when it comes to, you know, like Nigel described, the end of the day, you're back. It helps a lot to just start editing a little bit.
Mm.
Like you don't have to jump deep into it, but just get your files into a project and just look at them and like set some in and out points. Maybe even create a sequence of like usable clips. That way, I don't know, it's just somehow it makes me more like ready to jump into it when it's time to actually edit. And like Nigel said, you can actually export something to show to your producer. So that's
even if it's just test shots, like it's just like, hey, I took the shot of this product here, that one there. And the client's just so happy when they start to see the shots. They're like, holy cow, that's beautiful. And I'm like, thanks. And they, you know, everyone gets excited when they start seeing what's really, you know, what's coming out of your camera, and that they, everyone's excited when they start to see it. So,
100%.
All right. So there you go. End of the day. You've had yourself a whiskey. You called it a day and you're finally off to bed at 12 o'clock. And hopefully you've done a good job and it's on to day two. And that's going to be the next part of our video called post-production. And that's going to be on our next podcast, where we're going to be covering everything to do after all this production. And William, what do you think? You're heading into post?
Yep. So what's up? I think we're just going to cover that next time.
Sure.
We didn't make a proper list yet of all the topics we're going to talk about, but there's a lot of stuff between culling through your files, doing a first draft, doing color grading.
Color grading. Kind of
stuff.
Yes.
That's the stuff I live for. This is the color grading.
Yep.
I don't know how we're going to cover this one. It's going to be a massive one, but
Yep.
John, post-production, you got any final thoughts on that one coming up?
Post-productions? I guess we'll just see in the next episode. Yeah. I could be the, for the next episode, I'll represent kind of like the opposite of William. I like to do things quick and get them done.
Nice.
For color grading, I like to simplify things quite a lot.
You just had a new video on that, didn't you?
I did, yeah. So it was a very good video. Some contrasting opinions, maybe. Yeah. But we'll see.
Excellent, excellent. Yeah. All right, guys. Well, that's it for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. And as always, we'd love to hear your comments and suggestions. You can follow us on lafilmnation.com, where you can find all of our podcasts and YouTube and all those links that you need. It's all going to be there on www.lafilmnation.com. So, all right. As always, guys, thanks for watching and peace.
Peace.
Take care.
Later.